Mikal Bridges did not score 1 point. Okay, the top three scorers pretty much did not score tonight, but they won by 20.
That was the end of the game last night on Bally Sports Arizona. Kevin Ray, Eddie Johnson on the call. It's one of those games where you just start thinking of all the possibilities.
That happened to you yesterday, because I had that same feeling after one of the previous games where I'm like, this team can make it happen. So that's the way you felt last night.
I am finally thinking those thoughts, feeling those feelings that the Suns, and leading up to it, I'll be honest that I brought it up on the air.
Mm-hmm.
I was concerned that the Suns were stacking wins against teams that were not fully put together, that were resting players, and they were getting really good, good advantage of the resting schedule and injury schedule of other teams. But last night, and actually really the last two nights, they struggled to beat Houston, a team they had down big. They let them back in. I thought Houston played hard, but they just outscored them. They score 126 points against a bad defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
That was a playoff caliber team. And I know people are apt to use the word elite pretty freely. I don't think the Miami Heat are an elite team. I think they are a good, solid playoff team. And I think they were that, too, going into the postseason. And they got hot at the right time, so they can turn it on. Mm-hmm. But the combination of their ability on offense to go basket for basket with the teams that can really light up the scoreboard, and then last night for them to play the level of defense they did, and it wasn't just the bench. Mm-hmm. The starters outside of DeAndre Ayton scored to put the ball in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
They played defense all night after that first quarter. That, to me, when I saw the way that they locked in for basically the last 36 minutes of the game on defense,
yep,
that's when I had those thoughts. I think this team is really legitimately in the conversation. And some people might be listening and go, yeah, no duh, Vince.
No, but that's a personal thing. It's when it kind of hits you, when you kind of look at it and go, okay, you know what? This team is going to be able to get it done. As I said yesterday, I feel the same way, which is why if you could just guarantee me no significant injuries to anybody in the starting lineup, I am willing to deal with whatever happens, because that's all I want to happen in front of us this year, is for this team to get a fair shot at getting through that ringer and getting to the NBA Finals. And I think what you're realizing, I think you're starting to hear it from national guys as well. I think they're looking at all this and going, wow, they've got defense, they've got wings, they've got shooters, they've got a bench, they've got guys who can score at the end of the game. Like you said, they've got a lot of different ways they can beat you. So I don't think I've ever seen a story turn on a dime like this one, where you go 10 years without a playoff berth, and not just that. We know that the last 10 years in the rearview mirror is more than just failure. It's dysfunction,
mm-hmm.
and it's ridicule, and it's embarrassment, and it's all of that stuff. And now, just almost overnight, it's flipped, and it's I catch myself every single time I look at the standings and just going, wow, Suns are way up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, NBA.com earlier this week, they put out their weekly power rankings. Phoenix Suns are number one. They don't have the best record in the league, but they did get a win over the team with the best record in the league in a really good game last week. Mm-hmm. They are for real. And some people might argue about the whole climbing of the playoff hill. You got to pay your dues as a team. You got to have those bumps in the road, whatever phrase you want to use. I'm not necessarily buying that with this year's team.
I've said this several times before, but the bubble last year worked as they were able to skip a step, mm-hmm. because the bubble almost worked as their playoff experience. Every game was like a playoff game. They had all the time off, then they came back, so it was almost like another season for the rookies and the young players.
Yes and no. I agree with what you're saying in most part, but part of me also knows from experience that rolling through playoff series, it's entirely different than winning a game against a different team every night out. Inside a playoff series, you know this, Vinny, anybody who's ever covered a playoff or watched a playoff series, you know this. Game one happens, and it will lead to massive amounts of overreaction.
Mm-hmm.
Game two will feature major adjustments from the team that lost game one, and back and back and back and forth you go. Along the way, the games get more physical, they get chippier, they get more intense, and you've really got to have your wits about you. You got to have your composure about you. There's a reason why in the annals of the NBA playoffs, teams have thrown goons and thugs at guys to get them to blow up, to get them suspended. We've seen it here. There are a lot
Laboratory.
Of yeah, there exactly. There are a lot of things. I remember covering the Bulls. The Seattle Supersonics rolled out Frank Brakowski to thug up Dennis Rodman in hopes that Dennis Rodman would kick a photographer or, you know, elbow.
Or punch Frank Brakowski in the face.
Exactly. Yeah. And it never happened, but it could have, which is why George Karl did it. And so there's a lot of things. It's a grinder. But I think the Chris Paul element and the Jay Crowder element is going to lift this team over the top.
Well, that's an element. The Devin Booker growth outside of last night is an element. DeAndre Ayton is an element. Mm-hmm. If he plays like that, we've been waiting to say, people ask the question, when it was clear the Suns were good and a playoff caliber team, the question became, well, can they win with DeAndre Ayton playing the way that he is? You're damn right they can win in the playoffs if he played like he did last night. Mm-hmm. And the way that he's been playing mm-hmm. over the last month, basically. You know, we played earlier Chris Paul talking about DeAndre Ayton's performance. Here was DeAndre Ayton. His thoughts on being praised so much by Chris Paul recently.
I got to tell y'all, man, it's an honor every day. Like, it's actually unbelievable, you know, playing the next 10, playing aside him being my PG, I'm being in center. You know, just getting every little bit of wisdom from the guy. You know what I'm saying? He knows the game so well, and he just pays attention to the most littlest details, you know, that we're going to need in the big run. And, you know, you know, listening every day and playing and making the chemistry stronger and stronger. Games are becoming easy to play in. You know, it feels like I've been in the game in a while on the things he's pointed out to me.
Yeah, also about the defensive performance last night, holding Miami to 86 points and 52 points after the first quarter of that game. Mm-hmm. He was asked about defense last night.
Man, it's fun, man. I'm not going to lie. This stuff is fun. Just, you know, us knowing our personnel, knowing, having a chemistry on the court where whatever I call or whatever I say, you know, we adjust to it, we do it, they're on point, sending them to me, I'm protecting the rim, being a presence makes everything easier. And it's real fun, man. And, you know, that's what helps us win games, and we can't shy away from that. We got to keep competing every night and never back down from the challenges.
Now, granted, there's not a lot of history of, a recent history of 22-year-old centers being key players for playoff championship contenders. But again, I'll just look at the style of play. Mm-hmm. I'll look at what DeAndre Ayton is doing and talking about his comfort level right there. It's been very exciting, but it reached a different level of excitement for me last night.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's been growing for me because it's clear that he's doing some things way differently. The accepting physical contact is something he didn't like doing before, and he's doing it now. I really honestly believe Jimmy Butler thought he was going to go right through him last night and go right to the rim and get no resistance at all, and he just rose up and threw that ball backwards. Yep. It was fabulous.
It's also things like as easy as like him getting the ball in the paint mm-hmm. and knowing what to do with the ball. Not catching it, looking around, not hesitating, not taking it and passing it out right away because he mm-hmm. doesn't. Ayton's been much more decisive. The other great thing is that because we've heard a million quotes of his like that throughout the last 2 years, mm-hmm. 3 years. And now that he's actually developing and becoming the player that we were hoping, it's encouraging because it's showing that he actually is telling the truth, and he is willing to learn and willing to take criticism. So many young players, especially the number one pick in drafts, might not be as willing to learn from veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And he has always said from day one, especially with Chris Paul, oh, I can't wait for him to teach me. I can't wait for him to learn. And he's actually, and we're like, okay. But is it actually going to, and it actually is working.
I think last night was also a good game for Cameron Payne. I had told you that one of the guys I don't know if I trust in high leverage situations down the road, it's backup point guard.
Uh-huh.
Especially if Chris Paul gets nicked up and then Cameron Payne has to be the starting point guard. But every time I feel this way about Cameron Payne, he comes back and plays really well. So I don't know what to make of that, but he was a terrific force last night.
It was one of his better games mm-hmm. of the year, I thought. He was in command. And I will say this about Cameron Payne, and you're not alone in your thoughts. Yesterday's show, you kind of pumped the brakes a little bit and said, I don't know if I trust Cameron Payne as a backup point guard in a playoff scenario. And he's yet to prove that because the playoffs aren't here yet. But he's pretty, while healthy, he's pretty much locked down that spot. In a guard rotation that's had different guys coming in at the backup too, and maybe as a fifth guard, he's kind of been that guy all season long. And I think he did earn a lot of trust from Monty Williams last year with his play in the bubble, coming onto a new team under really weird circumstances, being out of the league and then joining a team and going to Orlando and staying there for a month.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did a lot to earn that trust. I'll say this, too. I do believe it was the best top-to-bottom bench performance of the year. James Jones has got to be laughing, you know, when he goes to sleep at night about the Torrey Craig the Torrey Craig acquisition. Abdul Nader was carving out minutes, and he was playing well. He's missed, 13 straight games with the knee injury?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where the Suns would be right now if they hadn't got Torrey Craig. He was phenomenal last night, and here was Monty Williams talking about Torrey Craig's performance.
Torrey's one of those guys that it gives you versatility on both ends of the floor. I thought tonight, defensively, he was really good on and off the ball. But he was in the slots a lot tonight. When we swung the ball to him, he would just catch it and go and make a play at the rim. I thought those were big plays for us. He's been an offensive rebounder. He's just had an effect on our team in multiple ways. But tonight, it just stuck out to me that his slot drives created offense for him. It helped us, especially when they were blitzing our guards or when they were in their switches. We would just swing the ball and he would just take off and make a play. You know, that's something that I didn't know about him. I knew he was a good cutter, and we've seen that from him, but I didn't know he was capable of making plays like that from the slot.
It's really one of the underrated steals at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not one of the most high-profile guys, and he came from a situation where Milwaukee had a loaded roster and they just couldn't find a spot for him. It's not because he's not a good basketball player. He's been fantastic for the Suns.
No, he has been. And he's just one of those guys that looks like a winning player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can put him on the floor and he's going to find a way to be productive. He's going to find a way to play physical. He's going to find a way to make positive contributions. And that's, I agree with you. To just kind of pluck that guy out of Milwaukee where he wasn't playing was really good.
Without giving up anything outside of cash?
Without a doubt.
Very, very good move. You don't have to be a star athlete to get your signing bonus. Just text BONUS right now to 620-620. Listen for your name this afternoon at 1:35 to win $500. Once again, that is BONUS to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus.
Bickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
I think it's one of those situations where, you know, there's all this, you know, this talk, you know, swirling around him and Green Bay. And, you know, I think it can be one of those situations where it gets nasty at some point somehow in a back and forth between, you know, the Packers and Aaron's agents. And then, you know, before you know it, somehow the thing gets blown up. So, I mean, I certainly hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, just where there's smoke, there's fire. You know what I mean? So this could be a situation where before you know it, you know, somebody makes a play or makes some kind of offer, you know, for Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay can't refuse and say, you know what, hey, you know what, we'll go our separate ways. He wants to be somewhere else. And you know what, we'll go on with the future of the team.
Charles Woodson, former NFL defensive back, one of the greats, former Packer. He was on CBS Sports Radio talking about kind of portending an ugly divorce between Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. And that was a story that was obviously talked about, maybe not to that degree last offseason, but you know, the reaction of Aaron Rodgers after the draft when the Packers went out and took Jordan Love in the first round, a player they got nothing out of. even in a season where they were able to get back to the NFC Championship game. And now there's all these reports about Aaron Rodgers' contract and negotiations for an extension or holding up the Packers in free agency. So the very thing that maybe Aaron Rodgers is concerned about when it comes to team roster construction, he's responsible for. The movie Cocktail wasn't a great movie, but there's a great line in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else ends badly or else it wouldn't end.
Yeah, it's a great line. It really, really is. I don't think it's true, but it sounds like it should be.
It's true most of the
time. It's true most of the times, yeah. I do think that there's a lot of validity that we're about to watch the last year of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Because I don't think he would be continuing to pick fights with them in his own special little way over the whole Jordan Love thing. And I think that eventually they're going to part ways. I don't know. That's a bold prediction from Charles Woodson.
It is.
But he knows the organization, clearly. And we know what happened to Brett Favre there.
Yeah. I mean, it was prolonged. It took years to get to that point, but it got there. Interesting. I mean, and Aaron Rodgers now has got a little leverage. He might be the all-time host of Jeopardy.
Yeah, I read something that people are really liking the job he's doing. Isn't he a little stiff?
He's a little monotone. I watched part of the first episode that he did, and he was stiff. He did a good job of reading the clues, and they're difficult, and you know, moving the game along.
All right.
I think he's a little bit looser now in week two.
He's better in week two. Yeah, I've watched both of them.
Really? Okay.
That's something because you were pretty critical of him before.
He's still very monotone.
Yeah. But he's a quarterback, and he's sitting in for maybe the greatest American, North American game show host ever. It's a pretty high bar. I think he's doing okay, but there was a funny moment last night. You know, it's always death when a sports category comes up on Jeopardy, right?
In the 1960s, these Midwesterners earned 5 NFL championship trophies. Green Bay Packers? Dennis, go
try
again,
title
I guess.
For 600.
They swept over the NBA, winning the title every year from 1959 to 1966. Eric?
We're the Boston Celtics.
Oh, you know that one, huh?
That's good. That is funny.
He is a pretty funny dude. I had no idea he was as smart as he is.
Yeah, former champion. Former celebrity Jeopardy champion.
But, I mean, what does that really mean?
It's true.
That's dumbed down more than the team tournament.
I don't know. Aaron Rodgers pretty much acts like somebody who knows he's smart.
That is true. He does have that kind of smarminess about
him. Kind of, yeah.
The other big story that's happening is you've got several teams now in the NFL saying, yeah, we are not attending off-season voluntary workouts. For a number of reasons, the Lions are the latest team to announce it today. Here's Tom Pelissero. The Seahawks and Broncos also said that they're not doing it. Here's Tom Pelissero from NFL Network with more on that.
Well, MJ, Broncos and Seahawks players became the first two groups today to announce they will not show up for in-person voluntary workouts this spring, citing in part ongoing concerns related to COVID-19. Now, this follows urging from the NFLPA, which has been pushing for another all-virtual offseason like a year ago. The union told players in a call on Friday and reiterated in a memo today that push for the all-virtual offseason continues, and it's the recommendation from their medical experts that players not show up for any voluntary work. I can tell you that other teams and their players have also been having calls. Some of those, I'm told, have been heated. You can expect there are going to be some more of these announcements in the coming days.
Adam Schefter put out kind of a calendar, a little list of bullet points on the important dates of the offseason, 9 weeks in length. Voluntary, except for one mandatory minicamp. The first phase is 4 weeks from April 19th to May 14th. The second phase is 1 week, May 17th to May 21st. That's virtual meetings with on-field drills with coaches per CBA rules. No contact in those. Third phase, May 24th to June 18th. That's traditional OTAs, full speed but no contact. That's in-person or virtual meetings, and then it goes on from there. COVID protocols, as negotiated with the NFLPA, with following enhancements, daily testing, staff vaccination protocols, and other regular season protocols in place. So this is a developing story.
Well, yeah, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see how the union handles this, because if football players are putting their foot down about quote-unquote voluntary workouts, all right, are they going to be expecting all the young players and rookies to do the same? Because that would cause quite an internal conflict in inside a team. Where if you were a young dude and you said, man, these coaches don't know me, I'm going to this thing, and you went, you would tick off the players who are trying to make a stand about how much you are going to control me during the offseason.
It is kind of a real fuzzy area, because if you are said young player making that decision, yeah, it's for your own benefit, but it's also for the benefit of the team.
Mm-hmm.
So how mad could a veteran player be?
Yeah.
Other than the lack of solidarity.
And a young player might be wise in assuming, wait a minute, you veterans don't need this stuff, but I do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your way to make sure I don't take your job.
Well, here's Mike Garofalo from NFL Network 2 talking about last year with the virtual offseason and the player's stance
now,
on it.
Players would tell you that the quality of play did not suffer last year when they had a virtual offseason program. Some coaches would probably disagree. I know I had this conversation with Sean O'Hara when we were on Good Morning Football a couple of weeks ago. He thinks that the technique was not as strong for offensive linemen, and I've heard that from some offensive linemen as well. But a lot of players are saying the quality of play, the product itself was totally fine, and look how many rookies contributed as well. So that's why they're making this push. And
yeah, there is an argument to be made, but and I don't know league-wide how many rookies suffered from not having a traditional off-season program or traditional preseason. I just know I think it was a big effect on the Arizona Cardinals' number one draft pick in Isaiah Simmons. I think we would have saw a lot more from him in year one had things been normal last year. So you could say the overall quality of play wasn't affected. But how many individual players were affected by it? Didn't get to do what they wanted to do because their preparation was all screwed up.
Yeah, I'm sure it affected every single rookie going into last year.
I just feel like
all of them were as ineffective as Isaiah Simmons was early.
Sure.
And part of that's the Cardinals' fault, too, for starting him in week one.
Yeah, you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
No.
And once they experience an offseason the way they experienced it,
yeah,
they're going to want to do that every single time.
I know, yeah. Right. It's true.
Pandemic ruined everything.
Well, it's going to be fascinating because the players' union is going to have to keep this together. This is going to have to be a league-wide, a player-wide initiative somehow, some way, because if this gets splintered, the union's got a bigger problem than they thought they had in the first place.
That is true. Coming up next, it's Wednesday. We'll have a round of Start, Sit, Cut. Straight ahead, it's Bickley and Marotta live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta want to know, who would you start, sit, or cut?
Wednesday is here. So is Start, Sit, Cut. Jarrett, what have you put together for us this week?
Oh, what I've put together for you. My goodness, goodness, goodness. Look at this. Quite a thing. I'm going to give you three options. I'm going to give you three options, and you'll tell me which ones you'll start, sit, and cut. Metaphorically, of course, or literally, whatever you want to do. We'll start with the Cardinals. And we were talking about earlier how the philosophy has finally changed to not spending a ton of money on the running back position after some years where they did spend a lot of money. So in the coming season, the 2021 NFL season, who will finish with the most rushing yards? Start, sit, cut. Chase Edmonds, Kenyon Drake, David Johnson.
I will start Kenyon Drake. I will sit Chase Edmonds. I will cut David Johnson.
Starting Drake, really?
I am.
Behind Josh Jacobs?
There has to be a reason they signed them. I mean,
they're not good at their jobs?
Yeah, I guess that might be it, yeah.
I'm going to start Edmonds. The David Johnson thing is interesting. I think they're going to add a running back in the draft. Houston. Mm-hmm. They got rid of Duke Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start Edmonds. I'm going to sit David Johnson. I'm going to cut Kenyon Drake.
Hmm. Do we definitely think Chase Edmonds is the starter? Is going to get the majority of the carries over Connor?
No, not necessarily. I think it'll be largely perceptual. The key is going to be whether or not Cliff Kingsbury can bring himself to commit to a two-back offense. Because he hasn't shown signs of doing it.
That is true.
He's barely committed to the one-back offense. It's true. All right. DeAndre Ayton has taken a big step in the last several games and really made the Suns an even bigger threat in the Western Conference. And I'm looking at, we love Paul and Booker, and you could argue the Western Conference is especially top-heavy with a bunch of great duos. But when you look at the trios, start Sitcut, the best third player on a team in the Western Conference. DeAndre Ayton, Mike Conley, Andre Drummond.
Do we think Andre Drummond is the third best player?
Do you think he's better? You would Kyle Kuzma? I mean, it's really amazing when you think of it that way, how deep the Suns are, even beyond the big two with talent.
I mean, based on...
I couldn't even think of a Clippers third one.
I mean, they have Serge Ibaka. They've got
Marcus Morris, but I mean, okay.
Based on success in their career, I'm going to start Conley. I'm going to sit Ayton. I'm going to cut Drummond. Only because Andre Drummond came out last night and said, this is the worst offense I've ever played in my life.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
He was laughing about it.
Yeah, he was. He's not had a couple of good games offensively for them. I don't know. I guess I'll start Mike Conley, sit DeAndre Ayton, cut Andre Drummond.
We're in agreement on that one.
All right. We talked about the future of Aaron Rodgers. Most likely scenario, 2 years from now. Aaron Rodgers is on the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers is on the San Francisco 49ers. Aaron Rodgers is the host of Jeopardy.
I will start Aaron Rodgers in San Francisco. I will sit Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. I will cut Aaron Rodgers on Jeopardy.
I'm going to start... Aaron Rodgers is the host of Jeopardy. I'm going to sit. He's with the Packers, and I'm cutting the San Francisco thing.
Wow.
They're drafting another quarterback here in a month.
Yeah, that's true.
Not that, again, that you're tied into 10 years of quarterback play in today's NFL, but...
And you know what's funny also? He is the first one, other than Jennings, of all the hosts they've had so far that said they really want the job permanently.
Yeah.
I
would want that job, too. That paycheck for 46 days of work?
Yep.
Sign me up.
Yeah, not bad at all. All right, we talked about the Cardinals potentially changing their jerseys. Best current jerseys in Arizona. Start, sit, cut. The Suns Valley jerseys. The Coyotes reverse throwbacks or reverse retro. You know, the purple Chino ones. Or... any other jersey in the Valley.
I will start the Coyotes, sit the Suns, bench, cut everybody else.
How could a third choice be any other jersey? You couldn't come up with one more, Jared?
I was thinking, that the Sun Devil football has like a sort of retro one, right? That are back to like the Jake Plummer days ones that they wear sometimes. People like those.
Their retros last year were from 1975, which is way pre-Jake.
No, I know. Okay.
I'm starting the Valley. I'm sitting the reverse retro, which I'm not as crazy about that design as other people are. But it's still better than a concept.
All right. Today's National Banana Day.
Oh, wow.
Best yellow fruit. Start, sit, cut.
Now, this is my kind of question. Go ahead.
Banana, pineapple, lemon.
All right, can I start on this one?
Sure.
Starting pineapple, sitting banana, cutting the lemon, and then squeezing it over a nice piece of fish.
That's right.
Squeezing it into a nice glass of vodka with ice cubes. I think that's the order. The bananas sound good, but pineapples better? Starting pineapple, sitting banana, cutting the lemon.
You know what's fantastic? A bowl filled with pineapple and banana.
Ooh, and
just
banana?
And just a two-fruit salad. That is delightful.
See, banana to me never works in a fruit salad because it gets slimy and soft and mushy with all the other.
Mm-hmm.
Good. More for me then.
All right. Final one. we were talking about... Oh, no, I guess we weren't talking. That was before the show. But Alex Rodriguez is going to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves. There was also rumors that Alex Rodriguez was breaking up with his long-term beau. No, beau is for long-term companion. Fiancé? What are they? I don't know. Jennifer
Fiance,
Lopez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beau.
Start sit.
J-Beau.
Start sit cut. This is just your personal preference, how much you like. J-Lo, Jello, Carmelo Anthony.
I'll start J-Lo, I'll sit Jello, and I'll cut Carmelo.
Hmm. What if I also threw in a Caramello?
See, now, that would
be a tougher one.
Top.
That would have been the starter.
That would have vaulted to the top for me.
Caramello, ooh, that is a strong.
All right, so,
oh, yeah, it is.
Sorry, Carmelo Anthony's out of the discussion.
All right,
now.
So get rid of them. We're replacing them with a Caramello. So J-Lo, Jello, and a Caramello.
I will start the Caramello. I'll sit J-Lo, and I'm cutting Jello.
Yeah. There's always room for Jello.
There's always room for it, but is there any reason for it?
Yeah, there's any reason for it.
All right, fair enough.
Jello.
Yeah.
All right, there was
You know when they call Jennifer Lopez? Did you ever hear this? They call her house. You know how she answers the phone? J-Lo.
Wow. Go to break, Jarrett.
Coming up next. Safe to say the Arizona basketball coaching search is not going well, at least through the eyes of some of the guys that wore the uniform. We'll get into that next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Dan Bickley and Vince Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Go!
Sean Miller, of course, fired by the University of Arizona as their head men's basketball coach. We talked about it a lot when it happened. We talked to Jeff Goodman about it. We talked to Bruce Pasco, who's covered the story for the Arizona Daily Star. What people couldn't get past was the timing of everything. Apparently a decision that had been made. They waited till well after the NCAA tournament and then pulled the plug on Sean Miller. So Arizona is behind the eight ball when it comes to coaching hiring. And I said at the time it would probably be a good idea, especially coming out of scandal and penalties self-imposed, maybe more penalties coming from the NCAA, to go back to a candidate that has real emotional ties to Arizona. I'm sticking by that, but I'm kind of rethinking it a little bit because it's been a common refrain from the guys that used to play in that program that if you are a Josh Pastner or a Damon Stoudemire, those are automatically the best candidates because they wore that uniform, which is kind of silly to assume that. I get what they're going for. But now there's players coming out just calling this coaching search an absolute debacle, a disaster.
Well, it's hard not to look at it that way because there was only one rationale for firing Sean Miller when you did it. And that rationale was you got a guy that you wanted to hire.
Yes.
And he was in your back pocket, time to pull the trigger, pull the plug, whatever. And this is not happening. And the longer this goes, the more you're getting some of these hallmark figures in Arizona basketball expressing their discontent with their school president for even thinking about hiring Tommy Lloyd out of Gonzaga. And I understand what they're saying, and I think that this is and Tommy Lloyd is a better candidate than he's being painted out to be by some of these voices.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of these voices are acting like this is the most ridiculous thing they've ever heard in their life. It's not. As we've reported for you and we've guested people who have said this as much, Tommy Lloyd basically has been doing all the heavy lifting for Gonzaga, and he's a terrific international recruiter. Okay, so there's a couple things he does really, really well. But there is also something to be said about serving your lineage and bringing it back to life. There's a reason why North Carolina hires Hubert Davis after going back and hiring Roy Williams.
Indiana
with Mike Woodson. Mike Woodson, does he deserve that Indiana job? No.
Has he spent one day as a college coach?
No.
Not that he's not a good coach. He's got worlds of experience, just not the experience that some
right.
people wanted.
But you've got to get the culture.
But here's the other thing about U of A, is it's even a step further. Like, in some of these alumni and boosters' minds, they're like, we're going to hire the assistant from Gonzaga? That's not how it works. Schools like Gonzaga hire our assistants.
Gonzaga, sorry.
Yeah.
It's the premier basketball program on the West Coast, Jarrett. They would appreciate the pronunciation.
I don't disagree with you. I'm agreeing with you.
But you're right. But you're bringing up a good
point. In the mindset, Arizona is like, we're going to hire a mid-major assistant?
We're bigger than that.
In fact, Mark Few should come here. He'd be lucky if Mark Few came to U of A.
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that Arizona basketball fans have no concept of how the job in its appeal has ticked down because of what's coming.
Yeah.
But what's happening now is a debacle. If you've got current recruits and players who are wondering whether to stay at Arizona or not, you're ruining it by not giving them an answer, by not giving them a solution.
True. And the chatter among the former players spilled over to Instagram Live. Richard Jefferson kind of hosting the Instagram Live and had Gilbert Arenas on, who made his preference very, very clear. Trust me, he did. Here it comes.
Who would you pick for the Arizona coach?
Damon Stoudemire.
Damon Stoudemire. Why Damon Stoudemire?
I mean, he's been coaching for a while now. He's established himself. You know, he's turned the whole program around, you know, where he went. So, I mean, he has the credentials. You know, okay. An assistant coach doesn't have credentials.
Yeah, you're talking about Tommy Lloyd, the coach from Gonzaga?
I don't even want to say his name because he doesn't deserve it. You're an assistant coach, okay? You assist.
Okay, now that's over the top, and it's from Gilbert Arenas, but at the same time, there's something to be said for that. He has never been a head coach. Okay,
it's the mindset is what his first head coaching job should be with the Arizona Wildcats. That's what some people think.
And again, there's an arrogance to it all, but that's the way the people who love the program view the program.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to serve the program.
Here's what Arenas elaborating on why he doesn't like the unnamed head coach from Gonzaga.
Coach was a part of a great spot because you see, he's been a part of a situation for 20 years, one of the most successful programs now in college basketball. Is that somebody that you just wouldn't consider?
Who?
The coach that you don't want to mention.
What did they do? They had an AAU scare. They didn't play anybody. And then when they did play someone, they got their ass handed to them. And as an assistant coach, you should have said, hey, listen, our offense is not working today. Maybe we should just play them one-on-one since we have a number 3 pick in this draft. Let him get busy since he's actually not getting any shots.
You know, that's a little bit goofy.
And that falls on the assistant coach again.
Of course, yeah. Damon Stoudemire, though, the reason why I think that he's the better choice here is when he went to Pacific, they were coming off seasons of 4-14 and 6-12. So he took a fairly anonymous job that was trending in the wrong direction, and by year 3, he was the coach of the year in the conference. Now, it's not the Pac-12, but I do think it's very, very important to restore what fans and everybody want here. And what I'm hearing from Gilbert Arenas and Richard Jefferson and who knows what Damon Stoudemire might say about it if he doesn't get the job, you're going to anger all of these people. And that's the last thing you want to do if you're Arizona's basketball program. The biggest issue from the people I talk to, it's not their athletic director. It's the school president. He's a heart surgeon. He's a cardiologist. And he's getting involved in everything. Robert Robbins is his name. And that is not going to work out well. At some point in time, you've got to step back and realize there's a culture, there was a culture here that was very valuable to people, and we need to plug that back in because that's what makes people feel really good about this university, about the basketball program, about going to the McHale Center.
Sean Miller had no ties to Arizona when he got the job.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that work out?
I think it worked out overall pretty well. They got 12 years out of him.
Well, yeah, had those.
Pretty well. Two of his assistants got him. Well, whatever. We don't need to argue about
one of his assistants
him.
Is in prison. But speaking of that, the funny in that interview, at one point, Gilbert Arenas is like, yeah, you know, I'd actually like to get into coaching. I wouldn't mind if U of A is hiring for an assistant, looking for an assistant. And Richard Jefferson goes, man, hey, you're a felon. Ain't nobody going to hire your ass to be around kids.
There was another cut, too, of Gilbert Arenas ranking his candidates. Damon Stoudemire won, then Miles Simon. By the way, an assistant coach with credentials? Is that Miles Simon? Where's he been a head coach again?
Yeah, well, that's...
See, that's what I'm saying. Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
The two things that tick me off most about Gilbert Arenas' arguments, one, he loves Miles Simon. Okay, great, but he also has not been a head coach,
exactly.
So that assistant argument goes out the door. And if you want to trash Gonzaga's schedule, their weak AAU schedule or whatever, Pacific plays in that same league.
Yeah.
UOP plays in that same league. And they
Gonzaga,
don't win as many games as Gonzaga.
Not even close. Gonzaga wipes the floor with them.
So you can't take that same piece of information and tweak it just to fit your narrative. Like,
yes,
come
you
on
can. That would make you Gilbert Arenas.
So frustrating.
But the one thing that can't be avoided, the clock is ticking. They are just falling way. They were behind to start, and they're falling more behind with every day that passes.
They
got Eric Musselman a contract extension at Arkansas, so I'm sure he's appreciative.
Oh, yeah,
it.
No, thank you. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
It's goofy, man.
Yeah. We're halfway through on this Wednesday. Bick's got your blast next. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.